Hello everyone, welcome to Yachting International Radio. You're with Corinne Rayson from the Crew Coach on the Wellbeing Project. Today I have a guest expert who specializes, I would say, in conflict resolution along with a plethora of other things, and we'll go into that, Joel. But first of all, I want to welcome you to the show.
Thank you very much, Corinne, and thank you for having me here. It's going to be fun.
My absolute pleasure. I can't wait to dive in. Before we do, can you tell us a little bit about yourself and your experience?
Sure. I have a lot of different experiences, as you mentioned, but I've spent years in the large software system space and corporate space, but I also do a lot of work with individuals and teams. And much of my work has been working with teams who are in turmoil, in conflict, want to improve things, but feel stuck. And mostly that is not about the thing they're working on. It's all about the interaction stuff. Yeah. And so helping people figure out new ways to deal with that and get past the sticking points is a lot of what I work on.
So, fascinating.
I'm in the Boston, Massachusetts area where, as we were just chatting about, the weather is going all the way back and forth between spring and the middle of the northern Alaska.
Oh my goodness. They say Melbourne is exactly the same. I lived in Melbourne for 7 months and you had to bring a raincoat, your bathers, a jumper. You couldn't bring it all in one bag because you never know what you're going to get throughout the day. So I can totally relate. Conflict, right? I would love to know from you. I think it sounds like we have something in common here, and that is a obsession in human behavior. I love human behavior, and more so, I love to see harmonious relationships. I don't like seeing people struggling. I don't like seeing people in pain. Do you notice a pattern when it comes to conflict? The reasons for the conflict.
That's the center line of what I do.
Interesting. Okay, tell me more.
A lot of what the... Yeah, so conflict does have patterns. You know, we've all lived through conflict and arguments and things that go sideways. And there are lots of patterns. And one of those is that a lot of the conflicts aren't actually about the thing we're talking about. You know, as I'm sure you've both been in a situation where you try to talk to somebody about something, you know you agree. And 5 minutes later, it's melted down and gone sideways. Mm. And it couldn't be about the thing we're talking about. It's about the patterns around it. That if we're in misalignment about our preferred patterns, stuff can blow up when we get our head stuck in the ceiling. And it turns out those are really easy. Well, I mean, it takes some practice, but they're easy to solve for because that's just, oh, take a couple steps sideways and approach it a different way. And everything calms down, as opposed to we have this really fundamental belief difference.
Okay, so what are you saying is to look out for the signs of conflict. So if you're noticing, for example, passive aggressive behavior, or people who are making snarky comments, or if you hear people gossiping about you behind your back, there's a cue there that there's something going on. There's something underlying. If it's not addressed, what you'll find is that you could come across a situation where you are required to engage and things can escalate and blow up quite quickly.
Right. And, you know, as an example, there are... one of the patterns that I spend a lot of time with is my story is better than your story. Mm. There's this concept of a story jump. You know, we can be having a conversation about something very normal, you know, maybe on board a ship about how something should happen, right? Well, we should do it this way, blah, 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 blah. And everything seems fine. And then all of a sudden you hear something like, oh, that process is crazy, or this person's an idiot. Well, that's where the conversation all of a sudden jumped into story. We're telling stories about stuff instead of talking about it. And once the conversation jumps to there, it becomes an epic battle of whose story is a better story. And everybody's going to have different stories. And that's not winnable. Yeah. So, you know, noticing where that jump is and how to back down from it is one of the big hooks, I think, for how to make progress, if that makes any sense.
It does. And funny enough, I was in a conversation with my sister-in-law last night where there was a conflict situation that she was experiencing at work. She's head of HR. There was the director and the CEO. Director and CEO are friends, both males. And then she was in a conversation with them. They had a set meeting and agenda. And my sister-in-law gave feedback. And the man responded saying, I feel like I'm being ambushed. I feel like I'm being attacked. And my sister-in-law didn't understand where it was coming from, but she did notice passive-aggressive behavior occurring over a long period of time, and she couldn't quite put her finger on what it is. And after speaking to a few other staff members, he reacts to feedback in the same way. And then he would send an email afterwards saying, "We're so tight, you know, we've got a great relationship going, but you're not really addressing the underlying root cause of the issue." And I'm wondering, for a lot of people in my advanced leadership course, we go through limiting beliefs. So the feeling ambushed or attacked, it could be related to previous lived experiences where any feedback that was delivered, they felt attacked. Therefore, any feedback that they get in whatever situation, they're going to interpret it as, "I'm being attacked."
Yeah, this is something that is sometimes called, if you, from a management and leadership perspective, is sometimes talked about as the hyper-responsibility trap, or could be, you know, where somebody who's in that position feels almost overly responsible for things that they don't own. And so any kind of criticism seems like a personal failing as opposed to just a systems thing to kind of figure out. And, you know, the way people talk, I become a student of words, you know, and when people get triggered, when they go into that, "I'm getting attacked," is to spin back the last couple of sentences and maybe ask, you know, what in the last couple things I said made you feel that way? As a way of unpacking the story, to be able, maybe to be able to be in this curiosity mode rather than trying to always be in rebuttal mode on both sides. So, yeah, go ahead.
But how do you get that individual to that point to be open to a conversation rather than being in the flight, fright, fight response?
Yeah. So, one of the ways is the way that the feedback is structured. If we start with the story, we can expect to launch into, "My story is better than your story." So if we say, you know, "Well, that was the worst possible way of doing that." Okay, we can have a predictable outcome there, and it's probably not going to be fun. If we start with, "What did I observe with my senses? You know, what did I hear, see, feel, smell, touch? What interpretation did I make of that? And how did it affect me?" Now it's about my reaction to what I thought I saw or heard, as opposed to me judging you up front and creating a story about how you're either awful or awesome. And that leaves the space for the other person to hopefully back off and say, "Oh, interesting. Well, that's not what I meant. Or I disagree with what you thought you saw or heard." And then we can have that discussion instead of the story battle.
Yes. And that's what I suggested to her, is to reflect back what she heard and what she saw. And even just being very blatant in how you interpret that by using the same tone or the same facial expressions and just mirroring exactly what you heard and saw. And then they can have that opportunity to sit back and go, "Oh, gosh, did I sound like that? Did I look like that? Actually, I did raise my voice." And then you're bringing it to the basics rather than, as you said, going into the story.
Yeah, yeah. Another piece of this, I think, is that if, so this is something that isn't about the how-to of how to interact with somebody. It's the self-check of where am I coming from? That if I'm coming into the conversation with a story about the other person being evil because they did this thing, and I'm here to correct it, that can lead to all kinds of things. And so the ability to step back and, before even engaging in the conversation, really decide whether I'm in there to correct somebody or just to clarify and to understand and to be curious can make a big difference.
So going back to conflict, have you been involved in mediations?
Yes, of various sorts.
Okay.
Which kind of mediation are you thinking about?
Just when there's a workplace grievance and you've got to resolve it between between two or more employees to work through it to find a solution. So how do you approach a mediation? Because I know that as heads of departments on board vessels, they would be in a position where they would need to. However, they don't seem to have the skills to do it. So they rather would say, don't bring any conflict to me. You need to sort it out yourselves. So that's something I regularly hear. And as a leader, that's not the sort of behavior you should be role modeling.
I mean, obviously there are a lot of different approaches depending on what's going on. What we just talked about, the starting with what actually happened. And we agree on what happened. And where I've often started is to do a little bit of education on this idea of the story jump, because people aren't used to noticing where that happens and even noticing within themselves when they're operating in story versus what's actually in front of them. And so to do a little bit of time with the various people about, okay, this is what this means. Okay, now there's a grievance. Is the grievance about your interpretation of what happened, or is it about the thing that happened? An example I sometimes use is if you've had teenagers, the pizza box in the sink problem. You know, so the pizza box has ended up in the sink 12 times in a row. And you could say that's because the kid doesn't care. That's probably not really what's going on. That's just my story about it. If we can stick with, okay, the pizza box is in the sink again, what can we do about this? Why is it there? Where do we go from here? Versus let's start with, you're a bad kid, you can't get this right, and now I'm going to punish you. That's actually not targeted towards the goal. And so maybe part of the challenge with folks who are responsible for managing this stuff is to help them think about what's the goal of the interaction as they walk into it, so they're not just reacting. As a friend says, to learn to respond instead of react.
Interesting. And that's where open questions are so vital. To elicit more information so that you can understand and work towards a resolution.
Right. It's coming from a place of coming from a place of curiosity instead of judgment. You know, that even if I have a story about what happened, what's actually important is what was going on with you that made this thing you did the most obvious and right thing to do. Because most people do what they think is the right thing to do in the circumstances they're in. And so if I don't understand what circumstances you were in, how can I possibly understand why you did what you did? And in many cases, once you fully understand the world that the person thought they were living in, you might even say, you know, if I were them and that's what I thought was going on, I might have done the same thing. And so that's a really different conversation. You know, maybe then it's, what were you missing in assessing what's going on around you, as opposed to you did something stupid.
Yes. And what's also fascinating is that I think values play a huge part with regards to conflict. And if my set of values is different to yours, Joel, it doesn't mean mine are better than yours. So it's, again, understanding where the individual is coming from and also gently raising awareness, because the person may not be aware. And so you can't transfer your frustrations onto them and expect them to know better and be on your page when you haven't communicated which page you're on.
Right. Yeah. And they can't know which page you're on anyway.
Yeah.
Because, you know, this little exercise I do with groups is you know, to visualize, pick a thing, you know, a bridge, a car, a building, and have each person in the group, don't describe it, just put a vision in your mind of that thing.
Okay.
And even if it's a group as small as four or five people, we then go around the room and have them describe their thing. They're all different. And then say, you know, by the way, we live our lives assuming other people understand what we're saying and that they're in our heads and they have the same visions of everything we're thinking. Okay, as a group, we took one word and it meant a different thing to everybody in the group. What does that mean about how we walk through the world during the day?
I love that. That's really powerful.
Yeah, yeah. Wow. So to always be curious about what is the scenario that this person thought they were in? And it probably in on ships, in organizations, big companies, people assume that everybody else is living the same world they are.
Totally.
Yeah. You know, and so somebody on the front lines in a help desk may say, the management folks, they don't care about us. They would rather have us do blah, 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 blah than do anything about it.
Yes, 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 yes.
Okay. Can we try to understand what decisions those folks are doing and dealing with today? And that maybe they aren't ignoring you on purpose. They're not doing something to hurt you on purpose. It's tragic, but they don't even understand the issue you're talking about. They don't know it exists. So let's not make up this story about the great good and the great evil, mm-hmm. and instead try to figure out how to communicate the things we're trying to communicate.
And that happens a lot in our industry where we make, or I think any industry, in fact, we make assumptions. And one of the assumptions that heads of departments receive from junior crew is that they spend a lot of time in their office and they're not on the floor and they've got to do admin work, but they just judge that and go, they're not working. They're doing other things. And they must be on Facebook.
They're out of touch. They don't care.
And then I get my students to do a feedback research inquiry. And these are some of the comments are coming through and they are shocked. They're like, I didn't know that they thought that or they think that. And this worries me because this is not the case. My workload is massive and I have to be on the computer. But then the junior crew don't realize that there's a suite of skills that you can use in order to, I guess it's a challenge those assumptions and those judgments. All you've got to do is ask and inquire and just say, hey, I'm just so interested to know more about your role. And, or if you feel like you would like them on the floor, ask, is it possible for you to spend time with us? We would love your mentorship. Yeah.
And this is why to me, and I've got like a dozen different models that I work with folks on to help them see this stuff. The story jump one is so simple. It's deceptively simple, right? Mm-hmm. But learning to recognize, for instance, they don't care that that's a story. Mm. It's not a reality. Unless they prove it to you with direct action, right?
Yeah.
We're all so sensitive to being excluded from the caring circle that it becomes like any little sign, especially from somebody with power, it reads that way. But if everybody can get a little more tuned into, wait a minute, I just said they don't care. Maybe I should ask some questions instead of taking that judgment as reality.
Yeah. And then the operative word there, I feel like they don't care. That is emotive. So I think when things get emotive, that is coming from a personal judgment or a personal opinion that needs to be explored.
Yeah. You know, it's really funny. I've done over the last couple of years, a bunch of voiceover and voiceover improv kind of work. I know this doesn't sound connected, but I promise it is. When you do scene analysis for acting, often it's about, you know, sort of who are you as a character? What situation are you in? What do you want? And how are you going to try and achieve it? In the last couple of weeks, I've been thinking about whether that model might be useful for helping people learn more about even just forget about acting, like real life stuff, right?
Okay.
I'm saying they don't care. Mm-hmm. What do I actually want? That's the thing we probably need to talk about, as opposed to trying to win the story battle of proving to you that you don't care.
Okay.
I don't know if that makes any sense, right? It's sort of like the what am I really, what is my goal is the thing I should be bringing to the table, as opposed to trying to prove that the boss doesn't care.
Yes. So I'm trying to apply that to a real life situation. I know we only have a few minutes left and I want to hear about your freebie as well. So I'm going to try to make this quick. I was working in the prison and we had our individual offices, but there were more employees coming through and they needed their own office. So our manager asked us to go into a shared office. Now, he asked over the course of 6 months, I think. So I can imagine that would have been very frustrating because none of us moved. My reason for not moving is that these new employees haven't even come in. We haven't even seen them. It doesn't make sense because we've got to do client work one-on-one. And it just doesn't fit in with confidentiality. It's not the environment to have a shared office space with a bunch of different inmates in the room. So eventually, and then the other lady wouldn't move because she's a hoarder. So she's had 10 years of stuff in her office and she thought, what a nightmare, I don't want to move. So everyone has their own reason. And the manager, I would assume that he's getting frustrated because he feels disrespected. He was new in the role. And so it blew up and he pulled us into the office and he said, I've had enough. And he raised his voice. He was screaming. He said, you've got 2 days to pack everything up and move. I said to him, Alex, it sounds like you feel disrespected. And he said, yes, I feel disrespected. And so it wasn't the issue around moving office. It was more that he felt disrespected than anything else. So I'm wondering if I used that statement, what do you want? How he would respond, because in his head, he might say, I just want you to move office, but that's not enough for us to be able to be motivated to move office.
I think, for starters, when somebody's already got their head in the ceiling, it's tricky to have a discussion.
Yes. Okay.
Maybe I wouldn't call it a timeout, but you know, the move, right? With kids is maybe can we maybe take a few minutes, a half an hour, whatever, cool off a little bit, and then we can come back and talk so that we can really talk about it. And maybe to just be able to lay out on the table, what are your interests? What would you like to see happen? What would you like to see happen? What do we see as the rationale behind it? Which of these things have obvious problems? Sort of really go into troubleshooting, problem-solving mode instead of who's right mode. And that's, I think, the challenge is helping them, helping whoever it is to unwind from my story is the only one. And I think one approach that I've used for that is to role play for a second. Okay, I understand that you really strongly have this belief. And I get that. And I see some of the reasons why that makes sense. Is it possible that there are other ways of looking at this that have at least some tiny bit of validity?
Yes.
Because one of the blockers there is this idea that there's only one answer. That if you can open the door to the idea that there are multiple possible answers and we're judging trade-offs, then it becomes group thinking about best choice rather than who's right. And so, yeah, a lot of what I do is with software teams in particular, you got engineers driven by logic all day long, right? That in those spaces, helping people to think about alternatives is often tricky and the most useful thing. That, you know, no, I have this great thing that you want to do. Okay, that's great. Are there other possible ideas about what's going on here?
Which just highlights how important as leaders it is to do training and learn these skills, because when you get the title, it doesn't mean you're automatically a leader. It is so complex. And I think self-leadership is number one. You need to understand yourself first before you can lead others. So the other, and I'm sure you experience this too, in organizations of a hierarchical structure, the mentality is I'm right, I'm at the top and you're wrong. You don't know better.
And so that's the big rotation, right? Is getting to the place where you realize and internalize everybody around me will have a different perspective on what's going on. They'll understand the world differently than I do. They see and notice different stuff. So I should expect that I need to understand where they're coming from if I'm going to work together with them. Because, and here's the key, because if I apply force, I can get compliance, but that only works while I'm watching.
Yeah.
And if I really want transformation, if I really want the team to pull on their own and pull the ball and figure out their own moves, they can't be in follow mode. They got to be in lead mode, which means I can't be doing it through pressure. I've got to help them to follow along and see the world the same way.
Yeah. Gosh, Joel, you certainly are a wealth of information.
Well, thank you.
I really enjoyed this conversation. I know we could go on and on and on. It's a topic that I'm certainly passionate about. But please do tell me more about your freebie.
Sure. Yeah. So there's a link I think we'll put in the comments or whatever after.
Yeah.
I have a worksheet that people can pick up. It's called Three Secrets to Turn Conflict to Collaboration. The story versus story piece is one part of it. There are a couple of others in there. And you would also get on my mailing list, which is a super low volume list. Really what this is about is I'm putting together a workshop series because I believe for these skills, it's one thing to teach them and talk about them. But it takes practice to really be able to do it, to walk into the storm and be calm and be able to just say, like we did with these exercises we were just talking about, to be able to be in front of the real situation and be able to sort of pick it up and look at it and say, oh, okay, I got four choices here. Which one is the best one to take right now?
Yeah.
And that ability to present that way and to not get your own head stuck in the ceiling, there's where the real power is, because then you have choices for how you want to go forward.
Brilliant.
So I would hope that people would be interested in signing up and staying in touch, and you get a free worksheet anyway. So, yeah.
Fantastic. So when does this workshop run?
I'm just putting them together, and really what I'm doing is building some interest and get the list together.
Okay.
And likely within the next month, I'll start running a few of them. And what I'm thinking about is I have about 12 modules of stuff. I was originally thinking about doing it as one large class, but then realized it's too much.
Okay.
And so what I'll probably be doing is picking off topics and running workshops. For
Brilliant.
Folks and probably having
what a great
subscription
idea.
Yeah.
Fantastic. And Joel, how can people find you?
I'm Joel Foner on just about every social media. F as in Frank, O-N-E-R. I've grown up saying that and watching people type P-H. It's Joel, J-O-E-L, F-O-N-E-R. I'm on LinkedIn, is a major place where I live. Also Instagram. I don't have a YouTube channel yet, and that you will have the link for these pages to get to stuff.
Well, thank you so much for your time and sharing your knowledge with us. I really appreciate it, Joel.
Thank you. It was great. And hope to talk again soon.
Hello, everyone. I just want to reassure you that conflict resolution is a skill that you can learn. So I highly suggest that you download Joel's resource or check out the Advanced Leadership course, which is Guest IAMI accredited. In this course, we cover conflict resolution, we cover collaboration, we cover how to work with different generations, as well as limiting beliefs. Being a leader is complex, and it is important that you have mastered the correct leadership skills to build a cohesive and collaborative team. For more information, send me an email at Corinne@thecrewcoach.com, or you can find me on social media, Facebook, LinkedIn, and Instagram.